Hey everybody, Michael Thiessen here with Liberty Coalition Canada. This morning, I get to interview Dr. Ted Fenske. So Ted, thank you so much for being here. It's a great honor to have you on with us, Ted.
Thank you very much, Michael. Nice to be here.
So the last time you and I got to be together, it was about 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. And it was at that time that we said, hey, you know what, let's go and do a podcast together and talk about some of the things that are going on in the world. So Ted, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and then we'll get going.
Thanks, Michael. I'm a cardiologist by training and I UBC grad and then U of A specialty training. And I work in a downtown hospital in Edmonton on the front lines. It's a tertiary care hospital. I'm not a researcher by any stretch of the imagination, but rather a clinician, see patients every day and take care of the issues as they arise, including taking care of patients who have contracted COVID and are particularly ill with it. So I'm involved with in the intensive care unit in terms of helping with some of the heart diagnostic testing on those very sick patients. So I have some exposure there. And I've been practicing medicine in the hospital setting during this whole time of pandemic, and it's presented, you know, particular challenges at every single level of my practice. And so that's my COVID-19 background, if you like. And I'm a father of three sons who are in their 20s, happily married these 33 years, and very active in our church, Christian Church, the Fellowship Baptist Church here in Edmonton. And delighted to be part of that growing and vibrant community despite the pandemic.
So Ted, yours is the voice that I think Canadians are dying to hear. So you're on the front lines. So I am not here to influence you towards how I'm feeling about things. I'm not here to try to manage your opinion. Can you tell us about what the last year and a half has been like? And again, feel free to share all of your opinion, because one of the things I am concerned about is the censorship of doctors and nurses. So feel free to share for a little bit about what's been going on. And if you could end with your sharing by telling us, you know, have you felt censored, or is that just a myth that those of us on the outside are concerned about?
You know, there's no myth around censorship. You're in Ontario base, right? And the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons publicly in April made a declaration warning all physicians, Ontario licensed physicians, against speaking against the party line, the narrative, the COVID narrative, in terms of the approaches, the lockdown, the masking, the certain approaches to minimize infection and the remedy, mainly the vaccination. So any kind of debate or questioning or concerns related to those things were warned against and heavily. And there have been many examples in the news. So it's not just a myth anywhere. It's well documented concern. This is irregardless of one's stance on these issues, it's very concerning. From a medical person's perspective, to have this kind of shutdown or deplatforming or censorship going on. This isn't how medicine works. It's never worked this way. I've been in practice for over 30 years. So I have a bit of experience with that. And I mean, just for example, one of the highlights of our medical meetings that we go to or have gone to prior to COVID would be to have the debates. And these were always the highlights. And so in a debate setting, various topics were chosen. And usually some of the more prominent cardiologists or internists would be chosen to be the speakers. And sometimes it was a panel, but some more commonly it was a one-on-one, you know? So it's like a cage fight and you want to go and see these people, how they would tackle an issue and how they would, work through that in a debating kind of fashion. And so there's an entertainment value, but also We also recognize in a longstanding that there's deeper value in terms of understanding more what's going on. When you have a different perspective on something, you realize, hey, actually, that's a good point. We hadn't thought of that, or yes, but what about this? And it's very healthy. And this is how medicine has been able to go forward. Oftentimes, innovations, they're lauded. They began by undergoing extensive critique and the like. And so this is a healthy process, and we're not seeing that here. So this is a new thing in my experience anyway, and I think quite a new thing for medical practice in general in Canada, that we don't have opportunity for debate and discussion, because there's a lot on the line here. There's no question that we're dealing with new things. And when we're dealing with new things, I think it's important that we just have a robust opportunity for discussion, and not just say, well, no, you can't say that. That's just against what we're saying. So I think at base here, we're dealing with worldview conflicts, and I think we can see that as Christians. We can understand that, okay, I understand here. This isn't really a science issue here. This is a worldview issue here. And that's why we're getting certain censorship, certain approaches to this, from on high. So that's definite phenomena in terms of my own censorship. I haven't had that per se, personally. And I'm not sure why that's the case. Maybe just because I'm on the front line, and maybe more under the radar. But I have had opportunities to speak on podcasts and even some public rallies where I was trying to give some support for our local Grace Life Baptist Church that was forced closure, and the wonderful pastor there was put in jail. I'm sure you've heard these terrible stories, and I was part of those rallies here in Edmonton, and so I didn't feel the sting of that, but maybe it's still coming. In terms of my own sharing of the experience of COVID briefly. Like everyone else, I was surprised when it first came out, and I remember vividly saying to a young lady who was planning her wedding in June of 2020, and this would have been March then of 2020, and we had the Mission West, Joe Boot was out to Edmonton, and we had really our last in-person meeting with people, human beings, not unzoomed, and she was saying, yeah, we were planning to get married in June, but I think we're going to have to either defer the wedding or at least have a very small number and then not go on our honeymoon. And in March of 2020, I remember saying, oh, come on, that's months away. It'll be fine. Forget it. Just plan your wedding, plan your honeymoon and just go for it. This is not, something that's going to be a lasting issue. And it's 2021 and we're still in it. Now, fortunately, there's been some reprieve of some of that more heavily concerns, but still I was wrong. And I think a lot of us were quite very surprised just in terms of the whole effects of COVID and the responses in particular to this. I mean, pandemics are serious things, but the response, the global response and the Canadian response, in terms of shutting things down, putting healthy people into quarantine and the like, is really an unprecedented approach and has created so much greater problems. And this is my practice. I mean, I mentioned at the outset that I have some involvement with COVID-19 patients, but the main effects that I'm seeing are the collateral effects of the pandemic on non-COVID patients, on people who have not been affected or have recovered. And it's revolving around the non-COVID diseases that have been put on hold, so to speak, the chronic illnesses that have been largely neglected, and the whole financial distress, which is so widespread, particularly here in Alberta, where we're really under the gun here financially. And it's been a very difficult thing for me to see my patients struggling in this way. And then superimposed on all of it is the mental health tsunami that we have here. And it's, if you had depression before COVID-19, you got depression now. It's really been ramped up, and for good reason. The isolation and the the fear that's been so palpable, you know, in our population. So this has been the real pain that I've seen is the collateral effect. And one thing that I love to do as a physician is visit parishioners from our church when they've been admitted to hospital for whatever reason, just to you know, pray with them, to be with them, encourage them, give them a little bit of scripture, this kind of idea, and maybe explain a little bit of what, if they have questions about what's happening, not to counter their physicians, but just to kind of provide some more clarity for the parishioners. And I've been I'm allowed to do that, even though I have hospital privileges. I can't actually move through the hospital as I once did. I used to kind of brag I could just, you know, walk through any hospital ward or ICU or whatever. So I've got my little lanyard on. I've been working there for 25 years, and I have access, and I don't have access now. They've limited that. They're trying to limit movements and within the hospital, even with physicians. And this has been challenging. I can only just imagine, you know, for yourself as a pastor doing pastoral visitation, your important pastoral work, how that must be absolutely handcuffed during this time. And important elements of our care for people have been completely neglected. So we've just focused right down on just the virus period, and everything else has to take seconds or thirds or fourths, as the case may be, or put on hold. This has been the real pain, I think, the real concerns that I've had during this time.
As you're explaining the situation, and you and I have spoken about this, part of the reason why I wanted to interview you is because you seem to have a very balanced perspective on the situation. So you mentioned about your actual treatment on the ground of patients. You also mentioned about the differences of the way things have transpired. And you also talked about, you know, the freedoms, the effects that are collateral damage. So as you were speaking, I thought of two different conversations I've had. I've had a conversation with a male ER nurse who months ago publicly berated me, and then we had a private conversation where he said, look, we are in a pandemic. All hands on deck. He fully admitted that we are about to have a mental health crisis like we have never seen before. And he fully admitted that they were already seeing that at his hospital. But that did not matter in his mind. We had to get through the pandemic. Then secondly, I was on the phone just 2 weeks ago with a pastor. And I'm bringing this together because you and I, we speak with people in the medical profession, and we also speak with Christians. They're trying to understand our perspective as we're talking these things out. And, you know, this pastor about whether the church should be open, you mentioned Grace Life, you know, you supported Grace Life opening, or you certainly supported Pastor James not being incarcerated for them opening. But this pastor said to me, look, Mike, this has to do with your perspective on COVID, about whether it's serious or whether it's not. And so here's how I'm trying to put the thoughts together. In my mind, it seems to me that people who are willing to lock down our country, as long as they can perceive that COVID is very, very terrible, then they're willing to do almost anything. On the other hand, you have people like me, where I have publicly said, if COVID was much worse than it is, I would still want our government and people to respect the rule of law and to respect liberty. That's why I'm a part of the Liberty Coalition Canada, because liberty is very important. So could you give us a perspective on what's going on in the ER and in the ICU? Again, I am not here to lead you to an answer. I really want to hear how you feel about the severity of COVID-19.
In terms of the severity, the there has been people who just blow off the COVID-19 as just another flu, whatever. And I think that's an oversimplification, where this is very different from our regular annual flu, and the effects of it are much more severe and much more long lasting as people recover from it. So even though the fatality rates may be at a certain level lower than was projected, a lot of that is because of the excellent care and the intensive care that's being provided. So it is a real concern. The counter to that, though, is that it's not Ebola. So I think our Ebola memory has unnerved the medical community. I think that's part of what's going on, in addition to a worldview issue. The Ebola memory, this is a very severe illness, 80% mortality. And we've had some exposures to that in developing countries, Sierra Leone, for example. There has been cases in Texas, for example, in the past, and this is very, very remarkably serious and concerning for the medical profession. And so I think this is part of what's been driving the fear, which is really an unprecedented phenomenon in my exposure. I've never seen my colleagues this fearful. And I think what the other element then is the worldview. They have their worldviews resting on themselves and their own self-sufficiency. And they have been lulled into seeing human beings then not as created in the image of God, imago Dei, but as viral containers. And the problem is not the fall, as we understand it, but rather the fact that these young people are having parties and people are getting together and having and churches are meeting and choirs are singing. This is the reason for the problem in their minds. The solution is not Christ's atonement on the cross, but rather the vaccine. And going forward is not our ministry of reconciliation that you and I are trying to be engaged in, but rather more masking, more lockdown, more restrictions, and the eternal view is not heaven's gates, but rather going back to the so-called normal. So this is the COVID gospel, if you like, and I think this is part of what's driving this. Once you're in that, once you have that as your base of thinking, you just go in one direction only. But in terms of the work in the hospital, it's not like we're lined with patients dying of COVID-19 at all by any stretch of the imagination. We have our cases. We did have to, at one point in time in December, move into our recovery rooms, our surgical recovery rooms, because we weren't doing surgery anyway at that time, and we were using those beds to help to take care of the overflow from our ICUs. So we did have a certain number well within our capacity. We've got a giant room with ventilators that have been remaining unused, but they're there in case we need that kind of thing. The greater is the cumbersome practice of medicine during this time. So we have to gown and glove and all this personal protective equipment, which we use not just for the sick patients with COVID in the ICU, but for all patients, because you're guilty until proven otherwise, in this current era. And so when you come into the hospital, you have to be proven to be COVID negative, and that can take some time. And as we're waiting for those test results to come back, then all procedures and investigations can be delayed and slowed down and halted altogether sometimes. So for example, if someone comes in with a heart attack and we want to do a test called an angiogram test, like the heart arteries, and we're not sure if they're COVID status yet, even though they don't have any symptoms to suggest COVID, they came in with a heart attack, it's clear. We've been at this for a long time. We can make the diagnosis. We have to wait. We can't do the procedures as we normally would have, and so everything's delayed and backed up. And so this is part of the real concern. With that, if there's any overlap of patient symptoms that they have from their disease process with the symptoms that have been related to COVID-19, they're COVID-19 until proven otherwise as well, or until those symptoms have resolved. And just one extreme example, a patient just last week who was in hospital dying at the end stage of his long battle of heart disease. And he had all sorts of symptoms that overlapped with COVID-19, but all of his symptoms were related to his failing heart. And I know that, and I could prove that, but still, because of the overlap of shortness of breath, for example, of heart failure and shortness of breath, for example, of COVID-19 pneumonia, then he had to remain on strict isolation, even though he's dying, and he wanted to see his family members. And this is absolutely tragic. And this is where I just get livid, because no longer are we even thinking medically anymore. We're just following certain protocols that are general and need to be individualized and specific. And so this is the real difficulty of the practice. We can deal with COVID-19, but the other things are just seem to be so maddening.
Ted, it's really interesting. You just put your thumb on a feeling that I've been having for 18 months, and it's one of probably the biggest stresses in my life. And that is that healthy people, lawful people, are guilty until proven innocent. Like, you just might have coined the phrase of COVID-19 2020-2021, guilty until proven innocent. Because it's one of the things that is the most maddening about me as a layperson. I walk around, I look at the doctors and nurses, I look at the hospitals, and I go, don't you guys remember these things called symptoms? And if nobody has them, we're healthy. Like, I have to go for a dentist appointment. I'm getting text after text right now about screening. And I'm like, number one, I'm not very interested in talking about every element of my health with my dental office, who is just forwarding information to a bureaucrat. But number two, I'm healthy. Like, I have voice strain because I talk too much. I have voice strain because I'm a preacher. But there is a real burden out there that we are guilty until proven innocent virtually everywhere you go. But you've put your thumb on the real strain on mental health.
Yeah,
I can't go to church. Why? Because you're guilty until you're proven innocent. And then even if you were to prove yourself innocent, you follow all of the rules, you're still guilty. Shut it down. I had a conversation with two police officers in our church parking lot a few weeks ago. And it was around this idea where I said, look, if someone's sick, they don't come to church. Like, if someone's ill with an issue, they have general respect for other people. And the answer was, well, not everyone's like that. And I said to them, so what? You're going to beat them with a club then? Like, is that what it needs? Like, everybody needs your club in order to tell them? Oh, no, not saying that. But really, Ted, in that little phraseology, you've just explained why I'm so infuriated by the situation, because everybody is treated like guilty criminals until they get something stuck up their nose.
Right. And part of that is because for the very first time in our medical history, we're testing people without symptoms. And so in the past, for example, pre-COVID, if you had certain symptoms, then we would test you for influenza. We do an influenza test to see if you've got that, to kind of fit with the symptoms you've got. We don't test everyone for influenza in the fall, even though it's quite common. But you know, if you have certain symptoms, we say, well, it'd be a good idea to clinch this diagnosis for Michael here. Let's test him for influenza. And then we'd do that, and we'd come back positive or negative, which would be very helpful for us. You know, today everyone's getting mass screening out of this, and so that's why we have case numbers so high. But you know, we've never ever reported on that before, ever. And so it's very misleading, because the misrepresentation of data then is part of what's driving the fear. Because for the very first time, the population's hearing all these case numbers. Well, but pre-COVID, they never heard case numbers for influenza. We never talked about it. We never reported that. We never measured influenza levels in patients without symptoms. We should not be measuring it in patients without symptoms now. And so this is a real error, you know, and it's just been driving home this point that you've been making about guilty until proven innocent.
It actually goes back to a worldview thing. I really have to connect this. Like, this is literally why I'm so concerned that we're moving towards, at such a rapid pace, towards socialism and towards a soft communism, because that is the idea. You prove your loyalty to the party. And if you haven't yet done it publicly, we treat you like the enemy. Mm-hmm. And I know that many physicians, I'm sure, Ted, would be mortified to think that we're trying to, when I say we are, I am trying to make that connection. But that's what I'm so concerned about, where, you know, as Christians, that's, we're responsible to tell the truth.
The value of the mask is that you can see that from a distance, that the person's got a mask on. So therefore, okay, they're following the party line, even though when you're outside biking on your you know, down the road with a mask on, it's just silly, you know. It has zero scientific or medical. It's actually more of a higher risk issue than anything else. Fog up your glasses and not see the stop sign, but so the masking is also part of that, and I think that's why people have really focused on that, because the benefits are insanity, really, how people are using masks today. We've been using masks. I've been using masks my entire practice, but not in this way. You know, we have a very specific use of a mask for a very limited time period for certain procedures, but to have them mandated for people. I know people who have the same mask. They've had it all COVID, you know, keep it in their pocket, same one. That's probably a medical problem in and of itself. But the fact you've got the mask on, though, ticks that box, I think, you're talking about, you know. And so from a distance, you can see, okay, that he's one of us or whatever, you know. And so I think it gives people a certain sense of being part of that party line.
You're a cardiologist. Why do you wear masks? Like, isn't it, if you were to have a common cold, would you be wearing the mask in order to protect the person you're operating on or the team that you're with from the cold that you have? Like, why do people wear masks?
Well, generally speaking, if we have a cold, you know, we're not going to be doing our regular works. We do call in sick and the like, that kind of thing. So we're not trying to bring in illness to the setting. A lot of our patients, in cardiology in particular, are frail and at risk for flu and the like. So if we're sick, we're not going to be, you know, bring that in. We have someone cover us. But generally, the reason why we're wearing masks, though, for our procedures, we do a lot of procedures in cardiology. They're not surgical per se, although we do pacemakers, which is a surgical procedure. And what we're trying to do is limit exposure of the you know, some I guess limit of hair, skin, and some secretions from the mouth when we're talking, whatever, and that we're trying to keep the field that we're working in sterile. So it's a sterile field that we're working in. We're trying to help maintain that. But at no point in time do we recognize that this is going to prevent viruses from moving around. Viruses are, you know, they're all over the place. Now, we do have special masks, and we do use them for in this scenario that helps limit, you know, the viral spread. But that's not what's been used in our population here today. You know, when we're walking around in the mall, we see people with their masks on. They're a piece of cloth or old surgical mask or what have you. They're not using the N95 viral protectants. And so even those have certain limitations, but we do use them on those kind of exposures to protect myself from the exposure of Ebola or COVID-19 or whatever it is that I'm being exposed to in a sick patient. But generally speaking, the surgical mask is to try to help maintain sterility of a field. And we're talking about bacteria here, you know, big guys, not these microscopic, bacteria microscopic too, of course, but the microscopic viral that can move through the mesh of the mask easily.
Okay, so Ted, the thing that our listeners are asking us the most right now is about these vaccine passports. We are getting between 20 and 30. At some points, we've gotten 100 emails in a day. people are with all of the mandates across the nation. I don't know all the mandates in Alberta, but with all the mandates across Ontario, there are people who are anticipating losing their job for not getting a vaccine. I am greatly concerned about these mandates, partly because of some of the things we've already been talking about. I already see the mask as an overreach to my liberties, and you see it as cumbersome to common medical practice. But now we have the frontline workers like yourself. We have nurses, doctors, we have everybody. The city of Toronto just made this announcement. I don't know what's going on in Alberta, but there are vaccine mandates going on everywhere. Are you concerned about these things? Share your opinions on the vaccines and particularly these vaccine mandates.
Sure. Well, vaccines should not be mandated. And this is a terrible error that's being committed. There's a number of reasons for that, but at base, there's bodily integrity that we need to respect. And we generally have done this. And I have had patients who would have benefited from the flu vaccine for years, elderly, frail people who don't want it. And they're still my patients, and I still take care of them best I can. And I recognize that they, for whatever reason, they decide they don't want to have that. And that's just their full-on choice, and that's fine. Even if I disagree with that, because I think there's a real benefit in vaccinations for certain populations, and but in terms of mandating it for the whole population, particularly a novel vaccination strategy, particularly now when there's more concern in younger people from the vaccine, and very minimal, if any, concern from the infection itself, it really goes counter to mandate something like that. And the other point about mandating a vaccine is that it won't actually help be the issue. Even though I've been vaccinated, I was one of the first off the block here in Alberta because I'm on my front line. So we got our vaccines right away. I got the Pfizer double dose, and it allows me to practice as part of being a physician in the front line. And you do that just like a police officer would put his flak jacket on when he goes to do his work. I recognize, though, that even though I've had the vaccine myself, I can still get the COVID-19. I can still shed the vaccine, the virus rather. And so it doesn't stop that process. So it's not a vaccine that's got an ability to sterilize and kill the infection, but rather it's going to dumb it down. It's going to make it less. So when I do get it, if I do get COVID-19 in my travels or in my work, hopefully it'll be a lesser infection, and maybe I won't have to go into the hospital or go into the ICU. This is the idea. So it reduces the severity of the illness, increases the chance of reducing the severity of the illness, but doesn't actually stop me being part of the whole process of transmitting. And so if we all got vaccinated, it's still a possibility then that the virus will move its way through. And so it won't actually achieve the purpose, which I think our leadership is hoping that will, the virus is with us. We got COVID-19. It's going to be our annual flu. It'll be part of that. The respiratory illnesses that we'll have in the fall and the winter. And it's part of the territory now for the world. And the mandating something like this, like you say, goes against freedoms, goes against bodily integrity, and it really goes against a scientific strategy of trying to deal with this problem. I think the older people, the frail people, the people with risk factors, they would benefit from this vaccine. I think it has merit. But again, I wouldn't mandate it for them. I've got older patients who don't want to have it, and that's fine, even though I think they would benefit from that. But they recognize the risks, and if they get COVID, it could go well, go poorly for them, and so that's something that they've accepted. And for whatever reason, they don't want to have the virus, the vaccine. And I can appreciate with a novel platform that is a bit scary because there are a lot of unknowns, and we are seeing things now for the first time. Young men, for example, with heart issues, that myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle, which can be quite a serious problem. And I've got two cases on the ward presently with this, and so it's a concern, and I think a mandate would be a mistake.
Are you allowed to report that concern? Are you allowed to report that as vaccine adverse reactions, or at least are you allowed to report it as something concerning here in Canada?
Well, I mean, we've talked openly about our concern about the relationship between the heart and the vaccine in these cases, for example. So that's not been censored. If that's what you're asking, no.
Okay.
But I think if one were to make a more of a public statement, there may be some pushback in that. But in our day-to-day working as a team, we've recognized these things. We're beginning to recognize them as we go.
I know that whenever I'm speaking to a medical professional such as yourself, everyone's careful to stay within their lane of expertise. So anybody, just if you want to know a little bit more of the particulars of the concerns around this vaccine, I did speak with Dr. Byram Bridle, who is a vaccinologist and an immunologist and a virologist at the University of Guelph. And he shares some just very common practices. He develops vaccines and some very common practices and reporting systems that seem to be overlooked right now. So Ted, thanks for sharing that experience that you're just having with it. There's a lot of fear about this, you know, even as you were sharing, I was thinking, I bet you there's some pressure at some point for you to report which one of your patients doesn't want to be vaccinated. Like it just feels like there is such an immense pressure. Workplaces are asking people their vaccination status. The government is polling to see how people feel about mandating the vaccines on individuals. I don't think I've ever felt this way in my entire life. Like, you're guilty until proven innocent, and then the unvaxxed hunt is on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I trained in the 1980s with the AIDS epidemic, and at that time, you know, we were pretty freaked out about AIDS, and for good reason. I mean, it was concerning, but only as we learned about it further, we recognized there's certain populations, certain risk factors, and we began to understand how to treat it finally. But what if it was the 80s and we were asking someone's HIV status to come into this restaurant? Imagine how that would have gone down. That's just by analogy, you know. So it's a confidentiality issue in part anyway. And, you know, I understand that people are worried about themselves, and so they're worried about being with you now because they're worried about getting it from you. But at the same time, it is medical confidentiality. And I think you should not be forced to have to say, yeah, I've got hepatitis, I've got AIDS, I've had COVID, I've got my vaccine. This is your personal information. And I think this is an error.
So you did bring up HIV. I believe that within our country right now, someone who is HIV positive is permitted to have sexual intercourse without divulging to the other individual that they are HIV positive, as long as there is a protocol followed. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but one of our pastors has been researching that, because it is a true analogy. Like, there, we do have diseases out there that are transmittable. Mm-hmm. And it seems that there's a great amount of freedom for people to still live within their, I guess, their more, you know, their own conscious decision making process. But when it comes to COVID-19, you know, it seems like that is all out the window. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. You brought up a good parallel. I'm not sure if you're aware of the current law in Canada, but there was a pastor investigating that and seems to think that way.
Terrible.
Yeah. Well, look, Ted, Dr. Fenske, it's been just a privilege having you with us. I think this has been informative. Thank you for your work on the front lines. I do want to thank you for continuing to go into the ICUs and the ERs, and thank you for being competent in your profession. I personally want to thank you for having a balanced perspective. I think some people are concerned that I'm only speaking to people who are really far down the road of concern, and you seem to be bringing quite an activist. And what I mean by activism, I mean an active and balanced perspective. So I thank you for that. What is there anything you want to leave our listeners with as we part ways?
Yeah, I suppose there is some value in pushing back on things. It is a shame what's happening, and especially for the young people. I've got three sons, as I mentioned at the outset, who are under in their 20s, and I think for our population under 35, the vaccines, unless there's significant risk factors, you've got obesity being our the number one that we see. I'd really be hesitant at myself about encouraging that. And so I think we're at a bit of a crossroads here as a country when we're seeing these kind of mandates being put forward for our young people. It's the young people that I'm primarily worried about. Folks your age and mine, we can deal with this, but in terms of the vaccine, if we have to have it. But I would just quote from Colossians 2, see to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. So we have to understand that we've been created in God's image, that we have living in this fallen world. We haven't been abandoned to it. We have a remedy, and it's not the vaccine. It's Christ's atoning work on the cross. And I think we have to keep focus on our relationship with him and keep our eyes on him, the author and perfecter of our faith as we move through this challenging time with grace and truth, both in balance.
Thank you for that, Ted. Actually, that's one of the last lectures I give during our week of training is on Colossians 2. And particularly there, when we're being taught about not being dragged away, the idea there is that those hollow and deceptive philosophies, which are based on the basic, it talks about the basic human principles or basic principles of the flesh, which is sin. Hey, don't speak up because that would be confrontational. Don't speak up because that would be inconvenient. No, we're not slowing down just because you want to have some caution. We're like making lots of money here. We're like, there's this very schoolyard part of those persuasive arguments, compromise people where they make their income and they'll do a lot just based upon that in human instinct to survive. And we're being warned in that passage to cling to Christ, who is our treasure of wisdom and knowledge. It's actually not just clinging to Christ for our salvation, but if you look at that whole first section, it is about clinging to Christ, our knowledge and our wisdom, which means that even you as a medical doctor are never allowed to practice medicine without clinging to Christ, your knowledge and wisdom. And if there's ever a moment in your medical practice where you go, oh, my spirit's in check because I'm doing something counter to God's word, then we let God's word override even what we would think experts do. And so I'm so thankful you have left our listeners with that. And I just wanted to emphasize there that it's not just clinging to Christ for our salvation, but it's actually clinging to Christ for our authority of thought. Well, Ted, thanks for your time. And listeners, go to Rumble, look at this video. You can download the podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Look, folks, we are trying to bring informed information. We are trying to bring a passion for liberty. We're trying to help contextualize these current situations and headlines with a robust Christian worldview. And or also a public theology, a way of viewing the world viewing the public world from a Christian perspective. So Ted, it's been great to have you here. Thank you so much for your time.
A real pleasure, Michael. Thank you. And God bless you.
And may he bless you as well. Godspeed to you in your ministry in the hospital. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to this Liberty Coalition Canada interview, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.